Coming up, we got Slightly Biased coming on my show for the first time. I've always wanted to have him on. Excited to talk to him about the NBA schedule. And then I asked you, the listeners, to send me some of your thoughts and takes and predictions about what we've seen this offseason and what we're expecting this upcoming season. And I fed those to him to find out if those takes are slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong. That's all coming up now with me and Slightly Biased. Welcome to the Kevin O'Connor Show. The NBA schedule is being released in full on Thursday. A lot of stuff has leaked out already, and to discuss it all and a bunch else going on around the NBA, Slightly Biased. Slightly, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm just doing great. Ready for some NBA schedule leak talk. The most exciting time of the offseason, some people say.
I mean, it is a fun time of the offseason. You get your Mavs 24-25 veteran hat.
That's true.
We'll talk a little bit about the Mavericks later. They will not be on opening night. We do have the Rockets and the Thunder. Kevin Durant making his debut for Houston in OKC. Warriors and Lakers will be playing as well. NBA going to LeBron and Stephen Curry. Again, no surprise there. But, dude, Rockets, Thunder, opening night. Big ups, credit to the NBA for doing this to Kevin Durant. I mean, this is going to be fun drama. Already got KD, you know, making slights against OKC. I'm fired up for this one already.
Yeah, this is a genius on Adam Silver and the NBA's part to do banner night, Kevin Durant, first game with Houston, and he's in the building to watch Oklahoma City raise the banner. This baby Thunder team doing what Kevin Durant's baby Thunder team couldn't do. It is fun. And it's funny, too, because, you know, Kevin Durant's one of the most petty players in the NBA. So, you know, this deep down at his core really gets to him. So I think it's genius. And I think it's a great opening game.
I mean, he's obviously, KD always responds to stuff on social media. Yeah. And somebody was saying, like, you know, good luck with the Rockets, though, champ. You know, your mental health is probably in a bad place right now. And KD responded, how do you know where my mental is at? And someone else said, where will your mental be opening night when you watch the team that gave you everything raise a banner after you left them high and dry? And he said, finally, it's been 10 years. About time they win one. Laughing my ass off. I mean, he's already clearly showing signs that he's being petty about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's that meme, that mask meme where there's a smiling face and the crying face behind it. That's clearly what's happening here. That's what's at play. Clearly,
I mean, look, he should be happy, though, that he is on this Houston team, because you think about OKC, they are the favorite. You know, I think it's very fair to say they're still the favorite. Denver obviously gets a lot better as well with all the additions they made, the changes they made. But Houston getting KD and possible internal improvement from their youth. Houston, like, do you think that they're the team most likely to take down OKC this season? Or would you put Denver as the team, or somebody else even, as the team that's most likely to take down the Thunder?
So I was actually thinking about this last night. I think the Thunder, Rockets, and Nuggets are the clear-cut three best teams in the West to me, but I think they're all in three separate tiers, honestly. I think the Thunder are by themselves. I really do think it's weird because they're coming off of a dominant season in a championship, and I think I kind of expected them to be a little bit more dominant in the playoffs and them going to seven games twice. I think kind of made people a little bit lower on them, if that makes sense, as weird as that sounds. And then I'd have the Nuggets in the next tier and then the Rockets in the next tier. So I do think the Nuggets would probably be the team that would push Oklahoma City the most. I mean, they took them to seven games. They got better. They have the best player on the planet. And the Rockets, to me, they're still green. I know they got Kevin Durant, but they're still just so young. And there's so much you have to project, I think. But I do think they're incredible. And I do think they're the second best team on paper. But I would just take Jokic over the Rockets, if that makes sense, as the second best team.
I agree completely with you, man, because I think with Denver, A, they have the best player in Jokic. That's a big part of it. B, they took him to seven with MPJ playing with one arm, Murray not having the best series, Jokic having four or five different defensive game plans thrown at him throughout the entire series, and yet they still go to a game seven, and you have a chance anytime you're in a game seven. And then they trade MPJ. get Cam Johnson, get the best backup of Jokic's career in Jonas Valanciunas. They get back Bruce Brown. You would expect possibly that, you know, with Daron Holmes coming back after he tore his Achilles a year ago, his rookie season in July, he comes back this year, stays healthy through summer league. Hopefully he's able to throughout the season. They have a lot of front court versatility. To me, Denver is the team that's most likely to take down the Thunder. And Houston, I agree with you. They're young. You need to see Amen Thompson take another step. You need to see Reed Shepard do some of what he did in the G League this year for Houston. There's a lot to ask from the young guys, and I feel like there's just more safeness and certainty with the Denver side of things. And, you know, the other opening night game, Warriors-Lakers, do you perceive either of these teams as legitimate championship threats? Would you even give them like a 1% chance at winning the title, or are they not even part of the picture in your mind?
I'd give any team with Luka, and to a lesser extent, LeBron. I always say lesser extent because he's going to turn 41 years old, 42 years old. Is he 41 right now or 40? Anyway,
41 so, in December. Yeah, he's old.
41 in December. Right. He's old. At some point, it's going to happen. Like, it seems impossible right now, but at some point, Father Time is going to catch up. But any team with Luka on it, I'll give at least a 1% chance just because that guy's an absolute killer. But it's hard for me to imagine, you know, either of those teams making a deep run. The Lakers are just, they did a good job addressing some of their areas of weakness, you know, like upgrading Jackson Hayes to Ayton. I'm not an Ayton fan personally, but it is a clear and obvious upgrade. But they still just have so many one-dimensional players on their team. And it reminds me a lot of some of those early 2020 Mavs teams where it's just, you got guys who are good shooters or good defenders, but not good at the other side of the ball. And it can lead to wonky lineups and stuff. And the Warriors, man, I just couldn't help but feel discouraged by what we saw from Jimmy in the playoffs at times. It just didn't feel like he had that gear. And I don't know if that was off because of a weird season or if he's just getting older and he doesn't have that anymore. So I get what the NBA is doing. You know, this could be one of the last times you get a chance to really push the grandpaps going up against each other and Steph and KD or Steph and LeBron. So I get it. I understand why they're on TV. Maybe a few years ago, I'd be like, why are we watching these two teams on, you know, a prime time, the second game of the season, ESPN or NBC, I guess. But I understand what they're doing with Steph and LeBron, maybe in his last year. Who knows?
I mean, look, I think I understand it too. I mean, like you said, it could be their last year. It's two legends. They're both good teams. They're going to be really competitive teams. There's star power on both sides. Like, I get them starting these teams on opening night. It makes total sense to me from a marketing standpoint, from an interest standpoint. I get it. Like, I'm not going to argue about them not putting LeBron James and Stephen Curry and Jimmy Butler and Luka on opening night. I think with these teams, you mentioned Jimmy Butler, how he disappointed you in the postseason. He's 17 points on 4 of 11 in their elimination game against the Timberwolves. And to me, I think the playoff Jimmy thing, it is so much rooted in just a handful of massive games that he had for the Heat. But in reality, his last 11 elimination games, his teams are 3-8. He's averaged only 21 points per game on only 16 shots a game, only 50% true shooting. So he hasn't been super efficient. He hasn't taken a lot of shots like stars usually do in elimination games. And the team is 3-8 in elimination games. And Jimmy Butler's last 11 elimination games, they needed him to step up in that series. He did not step up in that series. And so to me, I look at the Warriors and I'm like, you get Stephen Curry saying, you know, the only thing I'm playing for right now is a championship. And that's clearly true. At this stage of his career, he's only playing for a title. But then the Warriors are caught up in this Jonathan Kuminga saga lingering into the middle of August where they want to give him a two-year deal and have him rescind the trade off the no-trade clause. Kuminga might sign the qualifying offer at $7.9 million, which would make him an unrestricted a year from now. It just feels like the wires are crossed here, man. And like the Steph might want to contend for a championship, but the Warriors did their two timeline thing. And now they're in this Kuminga mess. It's just, I don't really see an organization that has alignment right now at all. I didn't last year. And I definitely don't now.
Yeah. It's TBD because this Kuminga situation, but I think they've had one of the worst off seasons in the league, all things considered, because like Steph is 36. I mean, he's getting up there in age. He's not, there's some injury concerns there. So you really got to push the limits. So you made the big all in. I wouldn't say all in. You didn't give up that much, all things considered, but you made a big trade to get Jimmy Butler, who's also older. This is probably one of your two last years, really, to make a big, strong push. And man, I just don't think they've really done much to improve their team in a conference that is loaded. And at a conference where a bunch of teams really improved in the offseason, this Kuminga thing is just, all sides are losers. There's like, whatever happens with the Kuminga thing, I think it's a three-way lose-lose-lose situation. It's going to be a loss for the Warriors because no matter what, they didn't sell high on Kuminga. If he ends up going to Sacramento for Malik Monk in a protected lottery protected pick, that's not a great return. I wouldn't love paying Kuminga. I think Kuminga's a clear-cut loser this whole saga, too. So, I don't know. This whole thing has just been shocking to me. This guy's been on the roster for years, and they clearly haven't wanted him, or Steve Kerr clearly hasn't trusted him to play him. And he's just wasted away while his value just tanks. I don't understand what they've done here at all.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think the whole Kuminga thing, they botched that from the start. You know, taking him, they probably should have went with Franz Wagner instead. They made multiple mistakes in that draft. Not probably. They should have taken Franz. It's easy to say in hindsight, of course, but Kuminga was always like a weird stylistic fit with the style of play that they play. Like, you're expecting a guy to completely overhaul who he has always been going back to the high school level and then the G League level. He's always been a guy that liked the ball in his hands. The ball slowed down when it was in it, and like, it's hard for those guys to change, and clearly he still thinks of himself as that type of player rather than drafting a player to fit your system. You drafted a guy and asking him to change into your system, and that's easier said than done. And then everything that's happened since then, I mean, like you said, they've botched this, it has not worked out, and now it's in this situation. It's just a continuation of everything that has transpired with them. And I look forward to seeing how it actually, you know, breaks down here. We'll see if he gets signed and traded somewhere or he's back on a one-year deal. Either way, it's ugly. On Tuesday morning, the NBA did release a couple of other games that are going to be playing. We found out on the opening night game for the San Antonio Spurs and your Dallas Mavericks, we're going to see Cooper Flagg and Dylan Harper facing off opening night. Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
That is. I mean, this was the Mavs opening night game a year ago, too. So they're clearly trying to push this a little bit. I mean, whenever I was growing up and really getting into basketball, Mavs Spurs was just, it was iconic. It was classic. You had Dirk, you had Tim Duncan, Tony Parker. I mean, it was great. And I'm hopeful, obviously, that Cooper Flagg turns into everything that I think he's capable of turning into. I think Dylan Harper is going to be incredible too. I thought he looked awesome in the few summer league games he played, but I think he's going to be great. He might take a little bit more time just because of the shooting and just that log jam backcourt situation that they have currently. But yeah, I mean, this could be back to the Spurs-Mavs rivalry of old that we thought we would get with Luka and Wimby, but we might get it with Flagg and Wimby and Harper and older AD, but I'm excited. I think this is a good opening night matchup for both these teams. It's fun.
What are your expectations for Flagg his rookie season? Like, does he need to play a major role for the Mavericks to be a playoff team, period, or a deep playoff team? Like, what do you want to see from Cooper this year when it comes to that?
Yeah, so any scenario in which I have the Mavs reaching what I think is a pretty high ceiling for them is Flagg being a top 50 player, top 60 player pretty much immediately. And, you know, there were some people when the Mavs won the lottery that said this was a terrible fit for him, which I push back on so hard because I actually think this is a great fit for Flagg because he doesn't have to do all of these things immediately. He can play off of AD. When Kyrie comes back, he can play off of Kyrie. He's got good shooters around him. He's got good defenders around him. But there is a playmaking void on the Mavericks roster that Flagg could, in theory, step in and fill a little bit. But again, it's not, he has to run the point guard. He has to have the ball in his hands every time. But there is a void where it's like, we're going to need some possessions where Flagg is initiating the pick and roll as a ball handler. Are Flags bringing the ball up the court? Are Flags pushing the pace and transition off of a rebound? And those opportunities will be presented to him. But then he'll also have opportunities where, you know, one of the things I loved about him at Duke was, I think it was over 200 pick and roll possessions as a ball handler, but he also had so many possessions where he was setting the screen and rolling to the rim. He'll have those opportunities to, you know, set screens for Kyrie, but I think you'll also see AD being the ball handler, Flagg setting a screen, rolling to the rim with Lively in the dunker spot. I mean, that's the stuff that really excites me because I think he's a special decision maker and playmaker for his size, Cooper Flagg is. So, yeah, I mean, I think does he have to be great immediately for the Mavs? Not necessarily, but if they're to reach their ceiling, I think, yeah, he's got to be a top 50 or 60 player, which I think is 100% possible. I'm really high. I think he's great. I think he's incredible. I'm so bought in.
And it is possible. He won National Player of the Year as a freshman. That's not a common thing that happens.
He was 17 when the season started.
17, exactly. He didn't turn 18 until middle of December. And then basically as soon as he turned 18 in December, he dominated as a shooter. It opened up everything for him as a player. And I think, look, top 50 to 60 is hard to do. Like, the league is deep with a lot of good talent. But you can't rule it out with a guy who from day one is going to be a really good defensive player on ball and off ball, who makes smart decisions on offense, who is assuming his shot translates another year, because that was the one question with him entering his freshman year at Duke, is how good is he as a shooter off the catch? How good is he off the dribble? Assuming that translates, you know, you have a guy who has a good shot. You have a guy, as you said, I think you're spot on slightly, that AD running pick and roll sometimes with Flag as a screener, or Flag running pick and roll with AD as a screener, then Kyrie comes back. They can play inverted basketball. They can play positionless basketball. And that's where I think, you know, Dallas being a quote-unquote bad fit for Flag was more, at least in my opinion, related to the fact that this is a franchise that the fans feel betrayed and you're going there. That was, to me, where I felt like it's a bad fit. But it's a good fit from a straight-up basketball standpoint, a team ready to win, a player who's ready to win even as a rookie. And then you go there and you can play so many different ways, especially, again, like once Kyrie Irving's back. And for the Spurs side, you know, I don't want to, you know, beat a dead horse here, as I have many times on the pod. The Dylan Harper, you know, fit with Fox and Castle, that is something that's going to have to develop over the course of time. Those guys or multiple of those guys are going to have to be shooters. But that's the question with so many of these rookies. It's like, can they shoot? Mm-hmm. Even with Cooper Flagg, I'm still asking the question, is he going to shoot as well as he did last year for Duke? Or is he going to revert back to some of those high school level of production? I'm betting on him being a star. I think the dude's going to be great. It's just a matter of what ceiling is he going to actually end up reaching as a player. But in general, though, I love the fact that the NBA, from what we know so far, they have Flagg and Harper facing off their first game of the season. You're already starting to try to brew interest in these young guys. You're having these guys maybe start a rivalry, just reignite the Spurs-Mavericks rivalry, as you said. And then you have both of those teams playing on Christmas Day as well. Because on Christmas, you have the Mavericks facing off against the Warriors, and then you have the Spurs against the Thunder. You already get the Wemby Chet stuff out there. I think the NBA did a really good job with, from what they've leaked so far, some of these big marquee games. It's rivalries. It's interesting teams. It's young players trying to put them on a platform. I love the Christmas Day games. I mean, we have them on screen right now. Cavs, Knicks, Spurs, Thunder, Mavericks, Warriors, Rockets, Lakers, Timberwolves, Nuggets. Those are all fun games, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I one of my big takeaways from the main schedule release, like opening night and Christmas Day, was the NBA thinks the East is going to be just dreadful. I mean, they don't have an Eastern Conference team on opening night, and they have two on Christmas Day. So, I mean, and you think about it, it's like, who would you slot in? I can't even think of the next team. The Pistons, maybe the Hornets. You know, the Hornets have never had a Christmas Day game in the history of their franchise.
Really, never.
Yeah. Huh.
I think they'll get one within the next 5 years. They'll get one.
The Hornets,
with Con Knipple.
I mean, I'm trying to imagine the Christmas Day, you know, like light up in the advertising with Con Knipple out there. I mean, hopefully.
Maybe someday. But no, I mean, look, I think Milwaukee, you could argue Orlando. Orlando, I think you could have made a strong argument, could have been there. But again, that's a gamble for the NBA to do something like that. And they took, you know, I think Spurs Thunder could be a risk. The Spurs might get beat by 40, but maybe they're actually pretty good. And it's a competitive game.
But you got
it's
Wimby, fun, though. Like,
yes, of course.
Wimby will be on Christmas Day every day until he retires, would be my guess. Same with Luka. Same with... I am surprised. I have to say, as a Mavs fan, you know, I thought maybe we'd get Mavs Lakers on Christmas Day, but I get why they don't do that, because that's... They could... that's a break in case of emergency type thing. Like that game will do gangbusters no matter what day it's on. So why put that on Christmas Day? I am a little surprised the Mavs are here without it being a Lakers game. I have to be honest. I'm a little bit shocked. I get it's the flag thing. But you know, that's a pretty big risk, I would say. We say the Spurs might be a risk. I mean, who knows? AD could be hurt and the Mavs could be 7 games under .500 on Christmas Day. I think that could happen. I wouldn't bet on it, but you know, it's interesting to me that they got put on Christmas Day. It makes me wonder if the flag's really that level of punch, packs that level of punch already.
I mean, I think they tried this approach with Zion. They put a lot of Zion games on TV and it didn't quite work out, unfortunately.
They bit the rules in the bubble to get him in there, to get the Pelicans in their 2020 bubble.
I know. I mean, so they did it before with a rookie. It didn't work out as they had hoped, but you know, this time around with Flag, he's not, hopefully not as injury prone as Zion Williamson or at all injury prone. Hopefully he's a guy who plays all 82. But I like the NBA investing in some of these young guys because you're right. It's Wemby, but it's also Dylan Harper. Like Dylan Harper has a fun style of play that could resonate with fans and make people enjoy watching the Spurs for more than just Victor Wembanyama. And look, I think one of the things that the NBA, it's going to be interesting this year with them because, you know, we have NBC now, you know, there's Amazon games as well. The NBA said on Tuesday morning that Peacock is going to stream up to 3 NBA games nationwide on Monday nights. And so games are going to be in different places every night of the week. Do you at all worry about accessibility to some of these games? Like, it's harder to watch games for a casual fan nowadays, or maybe is it actually a good thing that there's games on different networks and different places so different people can find these games?
I mean, it depends. Like, if you're asking me as somebody who I'll watch all 82 Mavs games, like that's, I have to do it, right? If you sit down and you calculate that, because the Mavs are one of these teams that don't have, you know, they don't have like a Bally Sports thing anymore. So they have their own streaming service. So you have to pay for that. Now, in order to make sure I watch the Peacock games, I have to have either YouTube TV or some way to access NBC or Peacock. I got Amazon games. So I have to have an Amazon Prime membership. I've got national games on ESPN. So I have to have an ESPN Plus or YouTube TV or whatever to get access to that. Yeah, it starts to add up. And then you're like, wait, how much? So cable was how much? All the streaming services are how much combined? That's where I've been at lately, where I'm like, I kind of miss cable. Like, I just kind of miss having my remote and all of this stuff was readily available to me. But if I think what you have to factor in with this stuff is the casual viewer that they're trying to really get to, right? Where it's like, oh, I have Peacock already and the Pistons Cavs are on. All right, I'll watch. Like, I, you know, I wouldn't have watched otherwise, but it just popped up for me and I subscribed to Peacock. So I'll tune. I don't even know what's on Peacock anymore. Love Island stopped and I haven't been on Peacock in 2 months, but I saw that they charged my bank and now I can watch a Cavs Pistons game. All right, I'll tune in. We'll see what Cade Cunningham's up to. Like that's kind of where I think it makes sense, but I think we are reaching a dangerous place. Like somebody calculated all the NFL stuff and it was, you're paying thousands of dollars a year to be able to watch all of your NFL games, which is just insanity.
Are you on Love Island right now with all those waterfalls? Your background.
Yeah, I'm at the villa. The newest bombshell.
filming the new season.
Yep.
You having a good time?
The seeds pulling all the streaks. Oh yeah, the Islanders.
Are you like the guy at the club? You know, talking to the girls, talking her ear off, and you're just talking about the upcoming map season, or you're having flashbacks to last year.
Yeah, I'm telling them. I'm like, no, you don't. They could have just gotten more of the trade. They could have gotten more. They should have held it. They should have held a huge auction for them.
They could have. Should have.
We'll be right back.
Let's play a little game here because I want to throw some things at you. I got listeners to send a bunch of takes and thoughts on the offseason and the upcoming season and to play into you being slightly biased. Let's play a game. I'm going to feed you these takes, and you're going to tell me if these takes are slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong. So that's the game.
All right.
All right? I'm going to feed you these takes and start off with an email from John. He said, Devin Booker will lead the Suns to the playoffs. Is he being slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong?
S- slightly biased for sure. I mean, I'm assuming this is a Suns fan. I can't.
Yes.
I think the Suns will probably be a bottom three team in the Western Conference. I don't see how their roster will be competitive in this West unless everybody gets injured and they're like, and it's like a few years ago where the Kings were the three seed. You're like, what just happened? And then you looked and the three seed won 46 games and everybody was dead. Like, I don't like their team. I don't like what the Suns have done at all. I don't like what they've done with Matt Ishbia. I think it's one of the worst cases of new owner syndrome we've ever seen. And they're in a rough spot moving forward. Because I think Malwatch, I like him. You know, I think the NBA will be an adjustment period for him based off of some of the stuff. You know, I'm not like a big college person or like a tape studier for draft prospects. But just from some of the stuff I saw, I envision the NBA being kind of a learning curve for him. And Mark Williams, I did like that pickup. It was kind of low-key, but how many games can you expect out of him? I've been a little concerned with D-Book, too. I have to be honest with you. Couple years.
Why is this?
It's just, I've just perked up a little bit, you know? There was times where I thought for sure Devin Booker was what? Like the 7th or 8th best player in the NBA? I think he's probably closer to 20 now than he is that. And you just extended him at that, you know, $75 million a year. That doesn't kick in until he's 32 years old. I know that's down the line and not next season, but yeah, I want to believe in Book because I do really like him as a player. I love the way he plays. I love how hard and competitive he is. But man, him leading a team to the West, Western Conference playoffs, a team that's just not good, in my opinion, roster-wise, would be quite the achievement, and I just don't see it.
I think it's so wrong. I wouldn't even say slightly biased. I just don't see the possibility of, unless they're like the 10 seed or the 11 and they win both play-in games. Like I don't see the vision there. And if I'm Phoenix, like to me, all the young guys they have, they got Rashear Fleming and Kobe Bray on top of Come On Malawatch. To me, like if I'm a Suns fan, I'm watching this game trying to feel better about what the team's going to look like 2-3 years from now around Book.
Right.
Like feeling promise around him. Like I used to call the Suns the bright future Suns when they were bad and then they became good. And then it was the bleak future Suns when things didn't go well post KD acquisition. But I think I want to feel like this team has a bright future again. I'm almost not even concerned about them making the postseason this year. I just don't see it happening. Another email from Jim. He said Lonzo Ball to the Cavaliers is the best under the radar acquisition of the season, and he is a Cavaliers fan.
Okay, I would say I say slightly biased because I don't know if I would say best, but I do really like the move for them quite a bit. I mean, Lonzo, I think it's a total of like 70 something games over the last 4 years. So obviously that's the big concern. They're not paying him a ton of money. They didn't give up a lot. I mean, Isaac Okoro was. Basically, it was time to get off of that. That was an experiment that wasn't working out. And I don't think Okoro is terrible or anything, but just for the makeup of this team, right? They needed something a little bit more. And Lonzo, if he plays, is one of the best perimeter defenders in the entire NBA and has just been an incredibly impactful defender every single year of his career. And he does, you know, he has more juice offensively than I think people realize. And can he tap into that? Will he be healthy enough? I don't know. But if he is healthy for them, look at how good Ty Jerome was for them. And Ty Jerome fell off a little bit in the playoffs, but he's a big reason why they won so many games last year was how good Ty Jerome was off the bench. I think Lonzo plays a different style, but could have that same impact as somebody who comes off the bench. But then if I look towards the playoffs and he's healthy, I think that raises their ceiling a lot. If you can get hit, you know, 20 minutes or so a night from a guy like that off the bench, especially with their backcourt concerns defensively, I think it's a great pickup. And I do think it's very under the radar. Like it's one of those things where could he swing a playoff game or something? And we're left like, wow, they got Lonzo for Isaac Okoro, like similar to the Caruso trade, you know, like a lesser version of it.
For sure. I mean, I think the injury concerns, as you mentioned, and the lack of durability in recent years, that's why it's slightly biased, not spot on with Lonzo.
Right.
Like I hope that he can help change the complexion of the team. the ability to play fast up and down, the energy he brings to the floor, especially prior to the injury that year when it was him and Caruso on the Bulls. Like, those dudes were awesome to watch on defense. I hope he can bring some of that energy to the Cavaliers, you know, up and down on the floor. But we'll see how the things change. It's not going to just be Lonzo Ball playing 20 minutes per game that changes that. It's going to have to be something to have to do with Garland and Mitchell and Mobley and Allen, the key guys on that team. Over on Threads, I made a post asking people for their responses. Chris said, Victor Wembanyama wins Defensive Player of the Year in MVP. Is that slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong?
I'd go slightly biased just because MVP is pushing it maybe a little bit. But Defensive Player of the Year, I mean, oh yeah, if he's healthy, he's winning that. I don't remember what the odds were. The odds were insane. He was just such an overwhelming favorite whenever he was healthy that it just feels like if you're going to get 65 games from Wimby, he's going to win Defensive Player of the Year every single season. That's just the way that it's going to go. MVP feels a little too early for me. I still think there's, you know, sometimes these young guys just take the leap and it's one year to the next. It's just, wow, they improved so much offensively. And we've seen Wimby's, those flashes for him, but I still think there's some stuff offensively that's a work in progress to where I don't know if it'll be good enough to beat out. When you're talking about MVP, you realize you're talking about one of the best players of all time, currently in one of the greatest offensive peaks the league has ever seen in Jokic. The Thunder will probably win 60-plus games again. Shea's having one of the best offensive peaks we've seen from a guard. Luka is probably going to average nearly a triple-double for the Lakers, so he'll be getting some votes. So I don't know if I would say MVP, but I do think the Spurs are a big-time breakout candidate, similar to like the Rockets a year ago, the Thunder the year before that. You usually see one team a year. So if that's the case and they're a three seed or something, yeah, he'll get votes. He'll get votes. I don't know if I'll say he win it, though.
Yeah, I'd say slightly biased. Slightly biased is what I'd say here, too, because Defensive Player of the Year, yes, I do think that feels like a strong favorite for him. But offensively, as you said, we know he's an elite finisher at the basket. We know he's a great shooter. We know he's super talented, but only 31% on dribble jumpers last season. He is not a great isolation scorer yet, efficiency-wise. Shot only 33 out of ISOs last year. Shot only I just think with Victor, the ISO scoring, the lack of on-ball creation with him, that's going to put him behind Luka, behind Jokic, behind these guys that we're talking about that are literally either former MVPs or former All-NBA guys. With Victor, it's just probably a year too soon unless suddenly it happens, which, you know, you can't rule that out, which is why I would say only slightly biased here and not so wrong, because that's the way it goes with some of these guys. Sometimes it just clicks immediately. And for the Spurs, I think with their roster construction slightly, you traded for Fox, you drafted Dylan Harper, you already have Stephon Castle, last year's lottery pick. I can't imagine that Mitch Johnson is going to put the ball in Wemby's hands and let him be the point guard. You know, I just don't think the roster construction means that we're going to see that from Victor all of a sudden overnight.
Yeah. I mean, the MVP case is, one, he was training with Chinese monks, and now he's training with Kevin Garnett. So I'm in on that. And that would be an incredible storyline if he were to turn into the MVP. But it would be, is his defense so impactful? Is it like one of the best defensive seasons we've ever seen? And then the offense takes a step. That would be the argument, right? Because he's not going to average the Jokic numbers, the Shea numbers, the Luka numbers. If he does, then it is game over for the league, right? But could we get an uptick in efficiency? And like you said, I mean, he's going to be playing off ball a lot more, so that could help out with his efficiency and stuff like that. But just the defense is so impactful. That would be the MVP argument. And I don't know, like, when was the last time we saw an MVP like that? You know, it's just the game's so offensive driven now.
I don't see it yet. I don't quite see it yet. I think one more year from now. Originally, I think before his rookie season, I said that this would be the MVP season. I think that was one year premature.
Yeah.
Next year, well, I'd say will be the MVP season. From A4 Shaw, he asked or said, Nikola Topic is not only going to be the Rookie of the Year winner, but a Sixth Man of the Year finalist. Is that slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong?
Well, I want to say so wrong because my guy Cooper Flagg is going to win it. But I will say slightly biased because I do really like Topic. And I'd throw him in. Big contender for Rookie of the Year and Sixth Man of the Year, absolutely. You know, I have a stance on the Rookie of the Year stuff that I think you should be first year in the league, personally.
Because I think agree. You get such I'm with a, you.
A,
You get a whole year of strength and conditioning and training. Yeah, it's crazy.
I don't think that should be counted personally, but I understand. But I think Topic is going to, you know, I was actually looking at the Thunder roster yesterday, and obviously they didn't do much in the offseason really, besides pay their guys. But I looked at Topic, I was like, man, if he pans out, is that, I don't know, you know, you're more plugged in with the draft stuff than me, but I think he would have been a top five pick a couple years ago if he didn't tear his ACL. So he's just a walking paint touch and a really smart player that just does Thunder things offensively that, yeah, I think he's going to be really good. And he kind of fits exactly what this Thunder team desperately needed at times. It's hard to say desperate because they won so many games, won the finals. But there were instances where it was, you know, especially bench production, where it was like, they just need another ball handler to like really take some pressure off of Shea. And this is a guy who, again, a walking paint touch, really good playmaker. I'm really interested to see what he's going to do. Because if he's having the season this guy thinks, rookie of the year, sixth man of the year, oh man. I mean, I don't know how you could beat this Thunder team, to be honest with you. I really don't.
I know. Because there's like little things you look at OKC, you could say, well, Jalen Williams, the J-Dub, J-Will, the backup center, you could do a little bit better than him. You could do a little bit better in the ball handling creation department behind J-Dub and SGA. And that's where Topic comes in, where, like you said, he does thundery things, great decision maker, gets into the paint at will. With Topic, you know, he shot 5 of 24 from 3 in summer league, small sample size, but it's a continuation of some of the three-point struggles he had pre-draft. If the shot, at least off the catch, is a threat, and he took a lot of those off the dribble in summer league, he's going to get minutes in the rotation. He's going to get probably heavy minutes in the rotation if he has the shot. If he doesn't, I do think it becomes a little bit more challenging to get him opportunities on the floor. But on paper, I do think he's a contender for Rookie of the Year. I don't think he's going to win it. I would take Cooper Flagg pretty easily right now as Rookie of the Year. But you can't rule out Topic if he ends up getting more opportunities and more minutes perhaps than people might expect. All right, next thing here from Evan on Threads. He said, if everything breaks right for Orlando, Paolo Banchero is going to be in the top five for the MVP.
Yeah, I mean, my initial gut reaction was that this is slightly biased. But since he prefaced it by saying if everything breaks right, I would say absolutely spot on. I mean, the Magic are a team that you think about what, you know, Cade kind of had this big breakout year last year. If you watched any of the Pistons during the years before, yeah, it was really ugly. Their team was terrible. But you saw all those flashes with Cade. The other problem was they didn't have any shooters on the floor. And Cade was a guy who kind of needed to operate in space a little bit. Paolo's pretty similar. And now you go out and you get Desmond Bane. You're making a real effort to space the floor and add shooting. And I think similar to what you saw from Cade last year, that finally these things just all fell into place and clicked and he had that big breakout that we knew he was capable of. I think you'll probably see that, something very similar from Paolo. And yeah, if the Magic end up being the 3 seed, which is 100% possible, I think Paolo will be at the forefront of that. And finishing top 5? Yeah, why not? I mean, you just have to finish 5th. You know, could Paolo be a first team All-NBA guy basically? Sure. I think that's possible with his skill set and his scoring ability.
I think slightly biased here is where I'd go. Wouldn't rule it out, but I do feel like it's banking too much on a full season of what he did in the playoffs, which was awesome. Banchero was unbelievable in the playoffs for the Magic. Yeah. He showed everything that you would want a young star to show in the playoffs, but you're asking him to do that over the full season. I think it's a bit much, unless the leap has happened and he, you know, he shoots efficiently and carries everything over that he did in the playoffs. But I think slightly biased here for this Magic take is where I'd lean. But I do think, you know, Orlando's roster has everything you want defensively. They have different areas of creation, different sources of creation. They've added shooters. They added Desmond Bane. I like what they did in the draft. So for Orlando, the roster makes sense. But to me, this team's upside, like this take here, does hit on what needs to happen for Orlando to actually be a contender. They're not going to be like an 0-4 Pistons, I don't think. They need Banchero and or Wagner to actually take a leap, actually become top 15, top 10 players in the league. I think Wagner has top 20 upside. I think Banchero has higher upside than Wagner. So they need these guys actually to take that leap. And if that happens, then sure. You know, Orlando can make a deep run and Banchero will be first or second team all NBA. But I just don't feel full confidence yet in seeing Banchero take that leap until it actually happens. But overall, though, like the Magic are going to be a fun team. And like we talked earlier about the scheduling, I'm a little bit surprised so far of all the stuff that's leaked. There's been nothing with the Magic. This young, fun team with young stars. Nothing's been out there with Orlando yet. If I'm a Magic fan, I'm like, what the hell? What about us?
I mean, this follows a trend a little bit where you do kind of wish the NBA was a little bit more proactive with some of these young teams that, you know, people who follow the league will look at and be like, that team will probably be pretty good this year. But they're just, you understand why they don't do it. Especially if I'm a schedule maker or I'm looking at teams I want to put in a prime time spots. And I look at them like, Paolo missed, 50 games last year and so did Franz. Like, if something like that were to happen again, God forbid, we have just the Desmond Bane-led Orlando Magic on a, you know, island game. Like, that's not something that we're really hopeful for. So I understand it. But, yeah, I mean, it, on paper, this team should be good. And Jamal Mosley's my guy. You know, I love him for, he was always one of the better, more respected assistant coaches on the Mavs. But this is a pretty big year. I think his seat's probably pretty hot because if they have another letdown year, I don't know. It might be time to start looking at some changes, some serious ones.
I would agree there. And speaking about hot seats, I think you could say the same thing about Doc Rivers and the Bucks. There's going to be pressure there after all their offseason changes. And not a serious person said on Threads that he thinks the Bucks finish as a top three or four team in the Eastern Conference. What do you think?
Well, I would say slightly biased because when you look at the East, it's like, well, somebody's got to finish third, right? You just assume the Cavs and the Knicks are the clear-cut two best teams in that conference. That it's, well, somebody, you know, somebody has to slot in here. And when you have Giannis, who, it's really sad to me that this Bucks team has been what they've been the last few years because it's really sort of, I think, take it away from how incredible Giannis has been over the last few years. I mean, he's playing some of the best basketball he's ever played currently. So I think when you have a guy like that on your team, yeah, you could always, I don't know, what would it take to be the three or four seed this year in the East? 47 wins? Like, is that around what you would need? That a Giannis-led team could get there easily. But yeah, I think I'm a little bit higher on the Bucks than some people. You know, I think it's the Cavs or Knicks conference to lose. But in terms of being a top four seed and having home court in a series, for sure, I think the Bucks could do that. I don't see why they couldn't.
I don't either. I think it's a real possibility. And I think the biggest question
for me with this Bucks team. Back.
Credit to that social media team there.
With the Cream City jerseys.
Unbelievable. I think, to me, the biggest question with Milwaukee is, Doc, what type of system does he install? What does this team look like? Where on paper, you look at the roster, it's like, okay, this team should play up and down. They should play fast, play with tempo. Are they going to do that? Is Doc going to put in that system? Is Giannis going to embrace playing that system? Are we going to see point Giannis? Or are we going to see like a mixture of KPJ and other guys handling the ball and Giannis being more of that still screener, off-ball guy, ISOs from the perimeter? But are we going to see April Giannis, where he averaged a triple-double and the ball was put in his hands, he was playmaking a lot? Those questions I don't think we will get the answers to until we see them in preseason. But if they play fast, like I think this team could be really good. And it wouldn't shock me necessarily if they're a true contender in the East, not to beat a Western Conference team necessarily, but to actually make a finals. I would rule that out with the Bucks. Is that crazy, do you think?
No, I don't think people... I mean, the East feels really, really wide open. Like, I do think the Cavs and Knicks, on paper, clear-cut two best teams. Well, the Cavs have had this playoff, you know, these playoff woes over the last 2 years. And the Knicks have their own set of concerns. I do think they're a really great roster, right? I don't have too many problems with the Knicks. But, yeah, I think there's a pathway for one of these teams, like Detroit, to take another step forward. I have some concerns about them. Orlando to have a breakout. Atlanta to have a breakout. Or just having an insane Giannis year. And that's enough. Like, there's a pathway for sure. And I think, Yeah, I'm higher. So you're at least higher than most people on the Bucks. Same here. I think they can make a deep run in the East. I think there's a lot of openings there.
We'll be right back after this break.
From Zach Campbell, related to the Eastern Conference here being wide open. He says, Jason Tatum comes back in March and the Celtics find themselves in the Eastern Conference Finals. Is that slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong?
So wrong. I don't think the Celtics will even be trying to win games in March. A couple days ago, I was looking at their roster, and this was after the Chris Boucher move, but I was looking at their team, and I'm like, is there a reason this team's not going to be dreadful? I mean, I'm trying to really, in my brain, think about a reason why this team won't be trying to purposefully lose games after the trade deadline, because obviously you're not going to have Tatum, and he looks good. It looks like he's recovering well, but there's really no reason for them to push Tatum back super early coming off an Achilles tear in a season like this that you're already kind of chalking up. But my Lord, the front court depth that they've lost is insane. I mean, they literally lost pretty much every playable front court player that they had on their team. And now you're looking at, Chris Boucher, their starting five. Is that what they're going to do? Or are they going to go Kita? Like, I think this team is probably going to be much worse than even some of the people who are low on the team think it'll be. And I'm looking at a full season of Jaylen Brown as your number one player. Are we like fully processing what that could look like?
Well, I mean, look, I think in the Tatum side of things, he's going to do everything possible to return because he's like idolizes Kobe. And Kobe came back in like 8 months after rupturing his Achilles, 12 years ago. The thing everybody like doesn't talk about after Kobe came back in 8 months was that he fractured his left knee 6 games into his return. And he missed the remainder of the 13-14 season. So with Tatum and with the Celtics specifically, Tatum may want to rush back like Kobe did, like any competitor would want to do. But the Celtics need to think about him and their best interest and his best interest long term. I think that Boston is going to be happy to be in the lottery. And ultimately, the bullish case for Boston in terms of winning and competing next year is, of course, Tatum returning. But it is Jaylen Brown being not only really good, but it's Derek White, I think, taking a leap. And I streamed on Twitch the other day, and Z in the chat said, Derek White will get a bigger role and make the all-star team in third-team All-NBA. I think this is crazy. I think it's so wrong. He is not going to be an All-NBA guy. Like, all-star replacement in the East? I don't know. Anybody could be an all-star in the East. I wouldn't rule that out. But third-team All-NBA.
All-star game.
I know. I'm not ruling that out. But third-team All-NBA, no. But ultimately, this is the bullish case for Boston. It's Brown being even better. It's Derek White getting better. It's Pritchard being a 18-point-per-game guy as with a heavier role on offense. Like, there is a bull case for Boston, I do think.
So I think the thing with Derek White, and it is different whenever you have maybe one game or two or three game stretches where it's like, all right, Derek White's going to have a bigger role because this guy's out versus an entire season. Part of, there are people who made like Derek White fringe all-star cases over the last few years, but that's because he's so good in his role playing off of Tatum, playing off of Jaylen Brown that I don't know. He's 31 years old. It's not like he's a 24-year-old and you're projecting all of these things. I really love Derek White as a player, but it's more of a complimentary, perfect type of glue guy that any team would want versus a guy who could step up and be the Robin and score, 20 points a game. I mean, isn't that like a prerequisite to make the All-Star game? I don't know. I'm not high on the Celtics really. And like you said, I think this is a perfect season for them to just be like, oh man, like Jaylen Brown tweaked his ankle February 20th. We're just going to take it easy and shut him down the rest of the season, and see what we can do with the lottery.
That's the best
case. It's a
perfect
year for that. Yeah,
yes, I know. That's what, it's literally the best case.
Being an 8 seed is just like what's with their salary
stupid
limitations. I mean, aren't they still over the second apron despite all the stuff
yes
they've done?
They that's are insane. Still. Exactly.
That's insane how that's even possible.
I know. So, I mean, look, I think they're if you're a Celtics fan, I want to be in the lottery. We just saw your Mavericks agreed move up from the 11th odds to get the number one pick.
That's right.
You don't have to be
old, baby.
Yes. You don't have to be a 17 win team to win the lottery. Yeah. You can be a 30 or even, you know, 41 win. 41 wins probably gets you in the playoffs in the East. 32 win team, you can be in the lottery and move up. So, like, this year, I don't know how much you've looked at the 26 draft class, but A.J. DiBonsa going to BYU, Cam Boozer at Duke, Darren Peterson at Kansas, among others that are going to be in contention for the top four spots. But those three in particular are all in contention for number one. Like, this is – there could be three Cooper flags next year is what it could be like. And I know people say that a lot of years, but this year, legitimately, that 26 draft class looks pretty crazy good.
I wonder if with the Mavs moving up, and we've seen, you know, teams move up, the Spurs moved up a little bit, if teams get to March and start thinking to themselves, God, would it be better for us if we just had the 10th pick versus making a real push for the play-in and winning the play-in tournament? Would it be better for us just to have this 6-7% chance to jump into the top four versus, you know, if I'm in the West, being the 8 seed and getting curb stomped by the Thunder in four games, you know? Like, I do wonder. I wonder when will it happen, and I think it'll happen at some point, that a team tanks a play-in game. I think it'll happen eventually. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering when that year will come where a team will be like, we don't want to make the playoffs. We don't want to be in there.
In the year you guys got Lively, there's, you know, a little bit of we'd rather be in the lottery than we would rather be in the playoffs. So I do think this year in particular, considering it's not just one guy up top, like if you're if you're the 11th seed, you get or the 11th spot in the lottery, you have a 9.4% chance of getting into the top four. If you are the 8th worst record, you have a 26.3% chance. So about a quarter percent chance you're going to end up with one of those guys that are going to be highly sought after every year. Fans are going to be drooling for those guys all season long. So I do think this could be the year we see some of that kind of tanking from the middle towards the back end of the lottery, in part because of what we've seen. It's because it's not just Dallas. I forget what number odds the Pelicans had back in 19 when they won Zion, but I think they had like the 8th or 9th worst record that year. And that was like, oh, these flattened odds really show how much things have changed. So we've seen pretty much every year a team like between the 7 to 11 spot move into the top four. 11 to 1 is a bit more extreme, but ultimately I do think that because of the flattened odds, it may have curved a little bit of like the horrific teams, you know, like process Sixers type of teams where you win 9 games, 12 games or whatever, but it has not got rid of tanking in the middle. There's still plenty of teams that just want to be bad. It's just not 12 wins bad. There'll be 28 wins bad. And so like no matter what you do, if as long as there's incentive to move up in the lottery, teams are going to try to lose purposely. And there's a lot of teams in the West this year, I think you could argue, would be better off in the lottery than in the postseason. If we talked about Phoenix earlier, like not that they have their pick, but like teams like that, you know, Memphis last year, I was pissed off. Like Grizzlies fans are like, we made it. It's like, no, you should be disappointed that they made the playoffs. You're going to get crushed.
I mean, that's how I felt in the play-in games with the Mavs, where it was like, whoever wins these is going to get derailed by the Thunder. Like, there's just not an argument to be made. And Mavs fans are pushed back and be like, well, the Mavs own the Thunder. It is bizarre. I don't know. The Mavs went 3-1 against the Thunder. The 3 games they won last year, they didn't have Luka. So I don't know. They do, I guess, kind of own them. But I mean, yeah, it's, I guess it would depend on your situation because I don't, let's say the Mavs had a chance to be the 8th seed this upcoming year. I think I would want that just to get Flag, you know, some playoff experience and stuff like that. The Mavs already kind of have their guy in theory in Flag. But if you're a team, yeah, like the Kings, where it's like, yeah, we would much rather have this opportunity to jump a few spots and land one of these top four guys. It makes sense for us to want to lose this game.
Yeah, I think for a lot of those teams, like the Pelicans as well, I mentioned them earlier, Ish said in chat that Joe Dumars will win Executive of the Year. That's a so wrong. That's a so wrong, right? don't give me anything else. That's a so wrong.
Yeah, well, it's like the basketball version of the Razzies, maybe, where they just give out the worst awards. I don't see a pathway for this.
There's no chance.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even see a pathway. Maybe Jordan Poole.
What needs to happen?
Jordan Poole, Sixth Man of the Year, Queen, Rookie of the Year. Like, that would have to be it. Where it's just they nailed it.
And Zion plays 80-plus games, and he's a top-five MVP guy. That would have to be what happens for Joe Dumars to have any chance. So I don't see that one happening. You mentioned the Kings. I tweeted the other day, are the Kings secretly trying to tank? And this was in response to Tim McMahon over at ESPN said the Kings are the favorites to land Russell Westbrook. We also know they have interest in Jonathan Kuminga. I just don't know. What the hell are they trying to do? What are the Kings trying to do here? So I think it's the statement would be, it's a slightly biased spot on or so wrong to say that the Kings are trying to tank right now.
I would say spot on. Not that their roster is bad enough to tank, really. You know, they're not the Utah Jazz level. But I think if a team were to call them right now and say, hey, we want Sabonis, and maybe we'll pay you 70 cents on the dollar, I think they'd probably do it. If a team called and would give them anything for DeRozan, I think they'd do it. If a team called and would give them anything for LaVine, they would do it. So I do think there's willingness there, but I don't think there's a market really for any of those guys. So now you just have this really bizarre roster. And I'm not a big Kuminga guy personally, but I like a team like Sacramento going after a guy like that because you just need an influx of young talent and stuff. But yeah, I have no clue. The Schroeder signing for them, I just like because I like Dennis Schroeder as a player, right? It's like at the top end of what I'd feel comfortable paying him. So I don't think they got him at like a value or anything like that. But the reporting then at the time was that there was maybe a sign and trade with Malik Monk for Schroeder. That didn't pan out. But now they're willing to give up Malik Monk for Jonathan Kuminga and then bring in Russ to replace him. I don't understand that. I'm left wondering, do the Kings know that you have to shoot threes in the NBA to win? Because I'm looking at the roster right now even, and I'm like, who's shooting threes for this team? Is Zach LaVine going to average 15 three-point attempts a game? Like, I don't, you know, for a team that was so fun offensively a few years ago. Yeah, they're such a bizarre team. And I don't think they're trying to win at the highest level. Yeah, me too. Well,
clearly not. Just like for Kings fans a few years ago, the Light the Beam Kings, they were a fun team, fast tempo, ball movement, Sabonis at the elbows, Fox, you know, speeding down the floor, high pick and roll. Like, it was just a fun team. And then you look at this group and it's like, well, now Sabonis is surrounded by DeRozan and LaVine and maybe Russ and maybe Kuminga. And it's just, I just hate the veteran mix. And you juxtapose that against their youth. I like the Devin Carter pick. I want to see him with a full year of health. I like Keon Ellis. I like their rookies. I love Maxime Reyneau drafting him in the second round. I love what they did in the first round as well. Like, I think for the Kings, like I like their young players. It's just, it's the veterans that I look at. It's like, well, I want to see Nick Clifford get opportunities with the ball on his hands as a rookie with the Kings. I want to see Nick Clifford running pick and roll and posting up sometimes. I don't want to see DeRozan eating all of those opportunities when they have some young guys that are actually really appealing and offer some optimism for the future. And that's the strange thing, because the same front office, the new front office this year that drafted those guys is making some of these crazy decisions with the veterans that they have. So it's very odd. I don't know if they're actually trying to tank. I think with these veteran additions, Vivek, their owner, has always wanted to compete and be in the playoffs. I think they're trying to be competitive. It's just this mismatch of the players is just not going to work. And I would hope at some point they trade some of these guys and then it becomes, oh, they not so secretly are trying to tank, but very clearly they're trying to tank out of the playoffs. So that's what I hope it becomes for the Kings.
Oh, man, I respect DeMar DeRozan so much because I love his game. I think it's he's one of the most skilled players the league's ever seen. But I was just thinking about it when you were talking about their vets. And I'm like, does their team just look and feel 10 times better if just DeRozan is gone? And I think the answer is yes. And that makes me sad to say because, you know, again, I respect his game so much, but it's just he's just such a weird player in today's NBA, you know, to have a team built around, especially when you already have Sabonis operates best, like you said, at the elbow. Then you have DeRozan. And then it's so clunky and awkward. I don't know. I mean, I called it whenever that transaction happened, where it was like this fun and exciting thing for the Kings to get a guy, the profile of DeRozan, right? For Kings fans to get a guy like that, a guy who wanted to go to Sacramento. But you looked at it and it was like, this is just such a weird fit that I don't see how it could work in today's NBA. And it has it. And God, they're such a bizarre team. I mean, they are one of the strangest constructed teams in the league.
Very much so, that's for sure. New Orleans is, Sacramento is, some of these teams in the West. You have all these elite teams in the West, and then these like, huh? What the hell is going on with this front office and this team and the Western Conference as well? Slightly, appreciate you joining me today, man. This is a lot of fun. Where can people find your stuff?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. YouTube.com/slightlybiased and Twitter @biasedslightly. That's where I'm at.
Slightly, appreciate you joining me today, man. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you again to Slightly Biased for joining me. Thanks to Emmy for producing us. Thanks to Father John Missy for the music. We'll be back again later in the week talking more NBA, especially with that schedule release coming out on Thursday. We'll have a show right after that's out. Have a good day, everybody. Talk to you soon.